Good morning. And thank you, Troy. I would just like to note that Mikhail Gordon, who has just introduced himself, will be our guest soloist tomorrow night at both services. So double welcome. And Eben Malcolm will be lighting our chalice and reading our chalice lighting words.
Let this chalice be for us the light of hope, the warmth of love, and the courage of action.
So before I call us to worship, I want to call us to attention and mindfulness. We are not usually together as this group that we have in this gathering, 9 o'clock people and 11 o'clock people. And all of you agreed who are here to change your schedule slightly to be here at 10 o'clock instead. And so you might want to especially greet people you have not seen for many months. So with that, I call us to worship with these words by Percival Chubb, which, as Dale said, what a wonderful name. Maybe he made it up. I don't know. But that's his name in the book. Welcome, rich season of bounty and good cheer. Wreathe every life with garlands of innocent mirth. Crown with green wreaths of joy the brows of those we love. Wreathe in red berries of health and the bright star of hope. Welcome, blessed season of peace that brings a truce to strife. And may the white wings of peace spread over the waiting earth, link all peoples and nations in the sure bonds of community, shed peace and goodwill, goodwill and peace on all. The adults may be seated. The children are invited to come forward. Our DRE, Bob Mosley, is going to do our children's time this morning.
How's everyone doing today? Good. So it's Christmas. You guys ready? Going to get a lot of presents? Did you guys bring me a present? No. No, actually you did. You might not realize it. But sometimes you get presents that aren't wrapped up under a tree or things like that. And what I mean is, every Sunday when I come and I have the chance to see you and talk to you and help you learn, and you guys help me learn about things that are going on with you, that's a present, whether you realize it or not. So sometimes you get a present that you can't play with or read or you know, bring outside, but it's still a present, and it's still a good thing. So remember, if there's no presents under the tree, you got a present anyway. So, but I'm sure you will. So I wanted to read you a short story. I don't usually read stories, but I thought this one would be a good one for today. And it's called A Baby Was Born. Once upon a time, a baby was born. Even before that baby was born, there were people waiting and wishing and hoping for that baby. The people who were waiting and wishing and hoping for that baby didn't know exactly what the baby would be like. And so they wondered, would the baby have a smile so warm that it could melt the coldest snow and ice? Would the baby have a voice so strong that it could shake the very mountains? Would the baby be so courageous that all would be comforted even during the most ferocious storms? Would the baby show the world so much love that peace would settle into even the most hardened hearts? But even as they asked these questions, as they imagined what the baby might be like, the people who were waiting and wishing and hoping for the baby already believed that the baby would indeed have a warm smile, a strong voice, a courageous spirit, and a loving heart. And they weren't wrong. When Jesus was born, his tiny body was wrapped up to keep out the cold. He was laid down on straw in a trough that was used to feed the animals inside of a barn. His young parents, proud and exhausted, had been forced to take a long journey far from home. His parents were two of the people who had been waiting and wishing and hoping for him to be born. But there were people who had been waiting and wishing and hoping for him to come. These people saw hurt and suffering in the world, and they believed that this new baby Jesus could use his voice to spread a message of love and peace, and they knew it would take courage for him to do so. But he wasn't the only baby that people have waited for and wished for. People also waited and wished and hoped for you. Once upon a time, you were born. But even before you were born, there were people waiting and wishing and hoping for you. But those people who were wishing and waiting and hoping for you didn't know exactly what you would be like either. And so they wondered, would you be kind? Would you be brave? Would you show love? Would you spread peace and joy? But even as they asked these questions, and as the people who were waiting and wishing and hoping for you imagined what you might be like, what kind of person you might grow up to be, they already believed that you would be kind and brave and loving, and that you would spread peace and joy in our world. They knew that you could help ease the suffering and hurt in the world, and that you would speak out against violence and oppression, and they weren't wrong. So we've talked about it before, right? Ways to help other people and be kind and show love, and everyone's been doing that. So that's the message for today.
I invite you to think on the things that you carry in with you, the joys and the sorrows, what you would like this community to hold while we listen to our music for reflection. Please join me in the spirit of meditation and prayer. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Feel your breath move through your body, bringing you life, energy, connection. Connection to all that ever was and all that ever will be. That breath that moves through your body moved through the bodies of the ancients and will move through the bodies of those babies yet unborn. All of us tied in one network of mutuality. And we are here to remember that, to remember that we belong to one another. And we belong to this earth, and we belong to all the others who walk this earth, those who walk with care, and those who do not. We are all bound together into this time when we are particularly aware of our hopes for peace, for reconciliation, for the times to start anew. Let us look inside and feel what part we need to play. I ask that our prayer be for insight and wisdom and the courage to act on what we discover, that we too might be bearers of healing and love and reconciliation in a hurting, broken world. We hold in our hearts the families who we will be hosting for the week, that they might find permanent shelter, sources of sustenance, a community to cherish them and help them find their way in this new world for them. May that call of hospitality, which is pressed upon us this week as hosts of Family Promise, that call to hospitality, make its mark upon our hearts, that when we say goodbye and send them to their next location, our open hearts of hospitality remain wide and clear and welcoming. for all our blessings, known and unknown, remembered and forgotten, may we be truly grateful. Amen. I will share with you the debate that's always going on in our ministry about whether or not clapping in worship is appropriate. And I am on both sides. Applause, in my opinion, is not appropriate because worship is not performance. Anytime we applaud, we have separated ourselves from worship, and I think that's a problem. But when we are moved, when we are feeling with the choir or the musician or the speaker and feel that we are being held in worship with them, and our clapping is a way of saying we are with you and moved with you and in your space with you, then it's beautiful. So just keep that in mind. Is your inclination to clap and applause for a performance, in which case you have pulled yourself out? Or is it something you are doing with the person who has just invited you into worship space? It feels different. So that was me being a rabbi. Because rabbis teach, even in the middle of worship. Aborn was a member of my church, and she was my neighbor. In her late 90s, she still enjoyed watching the children play, keeping up with current events, and celebrating Christmas. She looked forward to her Christmas amaryllis blooming, her packages arriving from her native Sweden, where they brought all of her traditional holiday treats and sweets. And she looked forward to the Christmas cards. The Christmas cards. She loved the Christmas cards. One day, when I stopped in for a visit, she had a pile of cards on her lap. And she was just sitting there in that happy place of reverie. She was all smiles and contentment. And I sat down to join her. "Reverend Anita," she said, "I must confess something. Something that sounds silly and foolish. I count my Christmas cards. I count them every year. I know I shouldn't. It seems silly, a little crass even. But I count them and count them. And I really don't feel ready to settle down and stop until they reach 100. "Is that wrong?" she said. "Is that wrong? I know that quantity is not the proper measure of value or importance, but somehow, it seems to matter to me, to matter that there are many. Many, even 100. I chuckled. I too have known the temptation to count my Christmas cards. In fact, I felt relieved and comforted to learn that a woman I had admired and respected, who was close to 100 years old, also felt that pull. The attraction of quantifying something that clearly is not quantifiable. My, my. So we talked about it. We talked about why it was that counting them seemed so compelling and what was so important to her about achieving that threshold number of 100. The pastor and poet J. Barry Shepherd, who also knows the allure of counting Christmas cards, offers her answer. And yet, she says, arithmetic aside, there is a buried treasure somewhere in these crass commercial symbols, the trace of a reality that calls me year after year to send abroad at least a word or two, seeking to bind fond memory with future hope. Aborn sat with me and thought long and hard about why it mattered to her. It mattered to her to know that despite her increasing limitations at the age of 97, people still cared about her. Despite the fact that she did not go out as often, did not encounter people as regularly in the ordinary day-to-dayness of the world of going to the supermarket or the library or even going regularly to church, walking in the neighborhood, playing bridge, she had not been forgotten. Those relationships that she had forged over all those years, they were real. Indeed, what she realized that she enjoyed the most was the reverie of recalling those friends and distant relatives, remembering the times they shared and how it was when they had been together. That remembering, that feeling of being close to people and times that were now so very far away, that was what brought her the deep and abiding satisfaction and pleasure. And there was a comfort, too, in her knowing that they were also remembering as they wrote her name upon the card and addressed and stamped it and licked the envelope and sealed it firmly. They were thinking about her for those moments, remembering, too. I could understand all of that. I could reassure her that there was nothing wrong or crass about it. It was natural to want to experience those feelings of connection and was in fact an illustration of her wisdom that she had learned a way to evoke those desired feelings of comfort for herself. I know that one of the reasons why I stubbornly insist on sending Christmas cards in this digital age is because the very physical act, that process of sitting down, selecting a card, writing their name, looking up their address, evokes all the emotions that bind me to that recipient. It strengthens my connections. Just as I make pictures of you when I'm writing my sermon, I make pictures in my mind of those people to whom I'm writing cards. And I hold them there in my mind's eye, in my heart, in the light of love. It's not only a tradition, it's a spiritual practice. It's an exercise of the heart. Count away, Aborn, I said. If it does all that for you, count all you want. And she did. Every year until she died at age 104. Deeply connected to her community and the web of relationships that held and sustained her. I cannot think of a better way to prepare for Christmas than to engage in the work of strengthening connections, reinforcing the ties that bind and sustain us, infusing intentionality into those relationships that matter, that bring us meaning and even joy, restoring relationships that have faded over time, reconciling broken relationships that still have meaning for us and for which the loss has been profound. After all, the call to prepare for Christmas has always been the call to prepare for the coming of the Prince of Peace. And who might that be? The poet understands the prophet's message, which is, of course, the message of love, of peace with justice, of human compassion. She understands it as the fresh truth of children The fresh truth of children who, though they come to us from our own bodies, are altogether new, with their small limbs and bird-like voices. There it is. The Prince of Peace, born and born again, in each generation, in each who speak truth, in their simple presence, about what matters and for what we must care. They look at us with their clear eyes and ask the piercing questions God alone can answer. It matters not in what God you believe or don't believe. They look at us nonetheless. They look with the clear eyes of the very young that discern a future that is possible and ask us if we will let it come to pass. Will we sweep away the debris and the detritus to which we have clung, the ways we live that cannot be sustained, the tribalisms we embrace that bind, that set one group against the other, the anxiety we allow to govern our decisions, the rivalry that poses false scarcity, proposing that if you have more, it must mean I have less. And the rancor that all of that engenders. Can we sweep that away? Can we set a clean table? We have 2 days until Christmas. Not a lot of time to prepare. But unlike shopping and cooking and baking, we do have time, even now, to seriously engage in the kind of preparation we have just now been considering. First, strengthening connections. It can begin now, right after service, with a phone call, or an email, a text, or a Christmas card, a hug, some words of appreciation, the offering of an apology or of forgiveness. Connections need constant attending and can benefit at any time, even now. Second, the relinquishing of all those things that get in the way of open, healthy, loving, compassionate life. Clearing the emotional table and setting it anew for the life that we want and for the people that we want to be. They look at us with their clear eyes and ask the piercing questions God alone can answer. It was Mahatma Gandhi who said, "Be the change you want to see in the world. Be the change you want to see in the world." And when we are afraid, we can recall Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, You must do the thing you think you cannot do. You must do the thing you think you cannot do. They are both right. And they are telling us what I think we need the most to hear and to heed. The children look at us with their clear eyes and ask the piercing questions God alone can answer. Be the change you want. Be the change they need. The God that is in you can answer. May it be so. God bless. Amen. And blessed be. I invite you to reach out. Hold one another's hands if that feels comfortable. Feel it. There, we're trying to reach everybody. Okay, we're all there. Feel that warmth. Feel that life. Feel that gift. So fragile, so precious. That's there for us to sustain and nurture. Take it with you when you go. That feeling. That knowledge. That wonder. Go then in peace, with courage, and with love. Amen.